Tendler spends his time learning Hilchos Mila on a lot of the specialty topics. So we're going to try and do a little bit more comprehensively through the Shulchan Aruch, some more basic topics. Some that we'll be quoting along the way, which are helpful for your own further research and relationship with these issues, is the Sefer HaBris by Rabbi Peretinsky. I think it came back to print. It's available. It's a phenomenal reference Sefer. But the Sefer you really should have and must have is the Otzer HaBris, which is a four-volume Sefer by Yossel Lemoyle. That's a phenomenal set of Sfarim. As well as the always classics, the Nishmas Avram, which we've mentioned in the past, Encyclopedia Hilchatit Rifui, the very helpful references for all of the issues that we're going to be discussing here, specifically the medical issues. So we're going to try basically more or less, hopefully more than less, to go al seder the Shulchan Aruch. We might veer a little bit, but we're going to try and stay on that that path. So the Shulchan Aruch over here, Siman Reish Samach of Sif Aleph, begins that mitzvah sase av limos benovi gedola mitzvah zumi shar mitzvah sase. This mitzvah is greater than all the other mitzvah sase. So the Shach in Aleph explains that it's because this mitzvah sase, along with Karban Pesach, are the only two mitzvah sase that carry with it a punishment of kares if you don't fulfill them. Since it carries a punishment that's greater than a standard mitzvah sase. This might be relevant halacha l'maisa because the Minchas Chinuch has a shayla, mitzvah hey. How much money does a person have to spend on the mitzvah of milah? We know, generally speaking, for mitzvahs aseh, you have to spend ad chaymish nechasev, hamevazvez ayivazvez yosim echaymish, but you have to spend up to a chaymish, 20% of your earnings. And aloy saseh, we know you have to spend kohon beisah, you have to spend everything that you have. That's the Ramah and Hilchos Avodah Zarah. You have to spend everything that you have. What about for the mitzvah of milah? Is the mitzvah of milah to be viewed as a mitzvahs aseh? Or perhaps since it carries with it a punishment of kares, it should be viewed as a mitzvah loy saseh? So the Minchas Chinuch is not sure how much money you have to spend on the mitzvah of milah. This could be relevant if you live in one of these exotic places. Let's say you're the rabbi on some campus somewhere and there's no moel nearby. And you have a baby boy. So how much money do you have to spend to bring in a moel? So it could be relevant to Rabbi Tendler has mentioned in the past. This does come up, Lamaisa. How much money do you have to spend in order to bring a moel might depend on whether or not we view the mitzvah meal as a mitzvah sase. We only have to spend al chamish l'chasev, or we view it as a mitzvah sloy sase, in which case you'd have to spend a few ad kohon beisai. The Shulchan Aruch over here already alludes to the fact mitzvah sase la'av limos beno, that there's a mitzvah on the father to bemoel his son. So in fact, some money ha-mitzvahs, the sefer mitzvah sakot on the smak, counts it as two mitzvah sase, one mitzvah on the son to do milah, and one mitzvah on the father to do milah. Two mitzvahs. The classical money ha-mitzvahs, the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch, only count one mitzvah here. And presumably then the explanation is that the mitzvah on the father is to see to it that the child does milah. There's not an independent mitzvah on the father. The smak held there was one mitzvah on the son, one mitzvah on the father. Most of the Rishonim understand that there's one mitzvah here that's primarily on the son, but as long as the son is a katan, there's a mitzvah on the father to see to it that the son does milah. That's why Baruch Be'er quotes from Reb Chaim that after the son reaches bar mitzvah, the father no longer has any precedence over anyone else. The father is no more special than anyone else. It's a mitzvah primarily now on the son. The father has been removed from the picture. But calls man that the child is a katan, the father does have this obligation to see to it that the son does milah. It's one mitzvah, but the father's obligation to see to it that the child does milah. Even though we don't accept the opinion of the smak that there's two mitzvahs aseh, there's only one, nonetheless you do see, to use a Rabbi Rosenzweig term, you do see echoes of that opinion of the smak, that there seems to be some unique status to the father here. If you're careful as you read Shulchan Aruch. For example, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, from Reish Sadi Hei, Reish Samech Hei, Sif Beis, so the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rambam that there's a difference, what is the nusach of the bracha of milah, depending on who's doing it. If the father is the one who's doing milah, so the Rambam paskins that the nusach of bracha is Limo Es Habein. Whereas if there's another moel who's not the father, so the bracha is Ala Milah. So the Rambam elsewhere in his rules of brachas makes such similar distinctions. For example, with regards to the mitzvah of mezuzah, the Rambam says if you're putting a mezuzah on your door, on your own house, it's l'kavaya mezuzah. That's your mitzvah. If you're putting a mezuzah on someone else's door, so then the brachas al-kviyas mezuzah. So it depends. If it's your bracha, it's l'kavaya. If it's a mitzvah you're doing for someone else, it's al. So over here, the Rambam says when the father does milah, it's limo asabein, which sounds like it's his mitzvah, not that he's doing a mitzvah for the child. Which is along those lines, that there's a separate, perhaps independent mitzvah on the father, as opposed to just to the fact that he sees to it that the son has milah. The Ramah writes that our minhag is always to write al hamilah, to always say Al Hamila, but that opinion of the Rambam, again, gives you that impression that there's a unique mitzvah, particularly on the father. A second place where you see this, perhaps, issue comes up is in Siman Reish Samech Hei Sif Aleph, where the again, the Shulchan Aruch brings the opinion of the Rambam as a Yesh Oimrim, that the only time you say, opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, let's look it up, is that if the father's not there, someone else says the bracha of Lachniso Baviso Shavram Avinu. If the father is there, he makes the bracha. If the father's not there, Emeina via ben Eitzel Amila, Yesh Mishom Eshadachim Evarach Brachasu. That's the Ramah. However, the Gra quotes in Sivka in Beis, Rambam disagrees, and the Rambam's opinion was if there's no father there, then nobody makes the bracha of Lachniso Baviso Shavram Avinu. So again, that would imply that, not that someone else makes it, no one makes it, that would imply that there's some unique status that's awarded to the father here. The third place where you might see this is in Reish Samech Sif Zayin with regards to the Bracha of Shechiyonu. The Shulchan Aruch's opinion is that if there's no father there, Reish Samech Sif Zayin, if there's no father there, so then there's no Bracha of Shechiyonu. And the Rambam disagrees that the father makes the Bracha of Shechiyonu wherever he is. The Shulchan Aruch says if the father's there, then he makes a Shechiyonu. If the father's not there, then there's no Shechiyonu. But the Rambam's opinion is, the Shulchan Aruch quotes, Rambam, the Olam ha-mevar Shechiyonu. Our father always makes Shechiyonu no matter where he is. So again, something unique about the Rambam. Parenthetically, with regards to the bracha of Shechiyonu, so the Sfardim do make the bracha of Shechiyonu, like it says over here in the Shulchan Aruch. But the Rambam says that we don't make a Shechiyonu. Ashkenazim don't make a Shechiyonu unless the father is the one doing the milah and it's a Bechor. And then the Shach goes on further and he says, we don't have this minig at all. We don't have the minig at all to make a Shechiyonu. Why don't we have a minig at all to make a Shechiyonu? So the Gra, and the B.R. Gra is upset about this. He quotes from the Rashba, we have no good reason why we don't make a Shechiyonu anymore. So that's why in Eretz Yisrael they follow the Minhag Agra, they do make a Shechiyonu. So you make a bris in Eretz Yisrael, you'll see that they make a Shechiyonu, because everyone follows the Minhag Agra. But in Chutz La'aretz, I've never been at a bris where they said a Shechiyonu. But it's a difficult. Why don't we have the Minhag to say a Shechiyonu? So the Gra quotes there from the Ravya that it could be because it's Tzara de Yanuka, the child is in pain. The Gra doesn't like that reason because he quotes him like, Maimon is that when a child inherits his father after the father just died and he stands to inherit, he makes a Shechiyonu. He's standing on his father's grave and he just buried his father. But he gets a Yerusha, so he makes a Shechiyonu on the house that he just got. So obviously we're not concerned with Tzara over here. If we'd be concerned with Tzara, we wouldn't make a Shechiyonu on that either. So obviously that's not a good reason to be doing the Shechiyonu. So the Gra's opinion was he shouldn't make a Shechiyonu. But again, the minig in most places is that you don't make a Shechiyonu. Another, perhaps, indication that there's a unique mitzvah, particularly on the father, with regards to milah, not only with regards to the bracha ala milah, alima ol sabein, or perhaps to the bracha of achnis v'visham avinu, or the mitzvah, the bracha of shechiyonu, but it's also with regards to shlichus, the gilyan marsha, at the beginning over here, simen reish samach, sif aleph, and it's quoted in the pischei tshuva, simen reish samach dalet, sif katan aleph, quotes in the name of the Shach, that shlichus doesn't work with regards to milah. If the father knows how to do milah himself, he should not appoint a shliach, he should do it himself. Why should he do it himself? So the Ksais HaChoshen explained the Choshen Mishpat, that that's because the mitzvah of milah, this is a famous Ksos about the mitzvah Shebegufo, where the Ksos distinguishes that you can't have shlichus on tzitzis, you can't have shlichus on tefillin or in the mitzvah of sukkah. Shlichus only works on a mitzvah that's not a mitzvah shebegufa, that I don't have to do with my own body. But if you have to do with your own body, so then shlichus doesn't work. Classic yeshiva shetar. So the Ksais HaChoshen says, milah is also like tzitzis and like tefillin, that you have to do it yourself. The mitzvah that the father performed milah is a mitzvah shebegufo, that he should do it. That's why Reb Chaim, I think it's in one of the svarim on the Rav, that Reb Chaim did the milah himself on Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. He held there's a mitzvah that you have to do yourself. There's no shlichus. And then I think he says over there that that he was prepared to do milah on the Brisker Rav also, and Reb Simcha Zel told him maybe one time was enough. He didn't think he did a good job. So he said maybe one time was enough. Now you don't have to. You don't have to do it. But people who know how to do Mila try, and there's a few anybody who has a little medical training and they know how to do Mila, so they sometimes take on this chumra over here. But if you know how to do Mila, so then shlichus doesn't help. You're supposed to do it yourself. The Darkei Moshe though over here and Siman Reish Samach disagrees, and he says shlichus does work by Mila, and that's the implication of the Shulchan Aruch too. If you're learning the Shulchan Aruch and Siman, which you all should be, and Siman Reish Samach Hey Sif Tes. So the Shulchan Aruch says that the father is supposed to stand next to the male during the Mila. He tells him, you're my shliach. Most moilim will tell the father, stand over here and appoint me as a shliach. So you see from the Shulchan Aruch that if he stands there and he points him as a shliach, that the shlichus does work. But if shlichus doesn't work, it's a mitzvah. Shebegufo, again, that would imply that the father over here has some unique mitzvah, which is relevant only to him, and reminiscent of that opinion that there might even be a unique mitzvah of Mila just on the father. The assumption of both of these approaches, whether there's a mitzvah on the father, no mitzvah on the father, whether shlichus works or shlichus doesn't work, the whole machlekes, the assumption is that the mitzvah of Mila is the act of taking off the arla. And then there's a question, is that a mitzvah shebegufa on the father or not a mitzvah shebegufa the shlichus work? But it sounds like everyone agrees that the mitzvah of Mila is primarily taking off the arla. However, there are indications otherwise. The Gemara says in Maseches Menachos that one time David HaMelech was sitting in the mikvah, and he had a chalishus hadas because he was arim in ha-mitzvahs. He had no mitzvahs with him. Till he remembered that he had the mitzvah of Mila in his yashva daito. That's a very important gemara for a whole bunch of reasons. That's to do with tzitzis at night, blah, 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 whole story. Why do you only have a chalishus hadas now? What about when he's in his room at night? No, whole story. But you see from the gemara, what in his yashva daito? Because he had a mitzvah of Mila with him, so the marach was arua, es, in his chuvis. What mitzvah of Mila did he have with him? The mitzvah of Mila happened when he was 8 days old. What mitzvah of Mila is there now? There's no mitzvah mila now. So Marach Or Zeruah says, you see from here that the nature of the mitzvah mila is not so much taking off the arlo, but it's the status. It's not the act of removing the arlo, but the status of being, as they say in Yiddish, gemalt, of being mahul, having no arlo. That's the mitzvah, not so much the act of removing the arlo. And this is very relevant, Lemaisa, primarily for two or three issues. Rabbi Tendler, I think, discussed briefly that nowadays we are, they used to believe in the world of pediatrics that children don't experience pain. But nowadays they did tests that when the child is in a painful situation, so they test his blood before the pain and then they test his blood while he's in the middle of the pain, and that hormone that reflects being in pain has risen. So you see that children experience pain. Others argue with those results, I say, no, that's because they did the meal. They're talking about the meal in the hospital. Meal in the hospital, they did the test, but that's always with a clamp. It takes 25 minutes. Here you're talking about a child. The mitzvah meal takes in shul takes, you know, 10 seconds as opposed to 25 minutes. So it could be we're talking about apples and oranges. But now, Niyach, that there is children, which I think is the push-up shot washer, they not experience pain. That a child experiences pain, so then is there a mitzvah to alleviate that pain with some sort of anesthetic? So some held that there was no mitzvah to alleviate that pain. Why? Because the Medrash says by Avram Avinu that he was mal himself in the middle of the day and he didn't do things that would have made it easier for himself in order lahachbil scharo, because of fum tzara agra. The more tzar that you're in, the more reward you get. So Avram Avinu tried to increase his reward by increasing his tzar. So the from that Medrash, the Shevet Alevi, before the Shevet Alevi, already Rav Meir Arik and the Imre Yosher writes that you see from here you're not supposed to alleviate the pain of the mila. The fum tzara agra. So most achronim disagree with that. Rabbi Avadia has a tshuva about this, and the Sri Yesh has a tshuva about this, that we don't see from here that it could be it's a midas chasidus, but there's no, we don't impose this on anyone. It's not something that to be aspired to increase pain in order to increase chavivas hamitzvah. It's a strange thing. So then why don't we use, so perhaps if the assumption is correct, which presumably it is, that children experience pain and there's no mitzvah to have pain, we should alleviate the pain when we can. Perhaps we should be using topical anesthetics or general anesthesia. So the Nishmas Avram, Dr. Abraham, quotes that he talked to all of the Mikubalim that he had access to, and they didn't have any source that he couldn't use an anesthetic, or he couldn't use a topical anesthetic. So then he quotes from Rabbi Yashiv and from Shlomo Zalman that it's where there's no sakana involved, so it's mutter. Meaning if you're not going to, general anesthetic might be chashash sakana. But if you're going to talk about a topical anesthetic, so they allowed it. Dr. Steinberg notes in his Encyclopedia Talmudic, so then why is it nobody does this? See, he claims that it's because the Mogulim told him if you put on a topical anesthetic, so it makes the area slippery because they're all oil-based. So like a cream. So creams, you know, if you put cream on your hands, it gets oily. So if you put it on the makom ha'milu, it will get slippery, and then they won't be able to do the milu as well. So Rabbi Tendler's argued, but if you do it early enough, then it'll all get absorbed, and it won't be a problem. So Rabbi Tendler, when he does a milu, or he's in charge of the milu, will see to it that there is some, you know, his cream that they make up, and he'll put on a topical anesthetic. But and most Rav Paiskim, Rabbi Yashub, Shlomo Zalman held that it's allowed. It just, for some reason, has not become the minhag to use it. What about a general anesthetic? So not so much by children, but if you have a Baal Tshuva who comes later in life to Yiddishkeit and needs to do a mila, so then this issue could become very important. Or certainly when we get to Geirus, this issue is also very important. A guy wants to come to Geirus at the age of 40. What are you going to tell him? You're going to say, give him a little cream that Rabbi Tendler made up, a little topical anesthetic. It might not necessarily do the trick. You might have to have a discussion about general anesthesia. So is general anesthesia allowed with regards to milah? So the Sri Deyesh writes, and that already was before him in the Tshuva of the Marsham, that you're not allowed to use a general anesthetic. Why not? Because mitzvah tzriches kavana, he says. So how could it be that the guy's doing milah while you're sleeping? Mitzvah tzriches kavana. So that's his discussion. So others disagree with the Sri Deyesh, Rabbi Yitzchak Lapanovich and Zecher Yitzchak. These makaris, I think, are in the binder. The Zecher Yitzchak disagrees, and he says, no, he quotes the Marach or Zaruah. Who said the mitzvah of Mila is the act of removing the Arla? If the mitzvah of Mila is the status of being Gemal, the status of being Mahul, so then perhaps you can enter into that status even when he's sleeping, because it's not the act of removing the Arla per se. It's when he wakes up and he has that status, he could have his Kavana at that point. So maybe this issue of what exactly is the nature of the mitzvah of Mila is relevant with regards to perhaps the issue of general anesthesia. It also, I believe, is relevant for a topic here at the beginning of Siman Reish Samach Aleph, and that is, let's say you don't do Mila. So the Shulchan Aruch says, "Imlo Mal Chayiv Kores," and the Ramah continues, "V'chol Yom Oivrim Ba'oin Shemelu." Every single day, you violate this Chiyuv Kores. Every single day, you become Chayiv in a Chiyuv of Kores. The Grunts of Cut in Bays notes that the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam's opinion was it's not every single day you become chayv and karis again. It's only when a person dies and he hasn't done milah, then he becomes chayv karis once. But it's not every single day. The Ravid on that Rambam disagrees, and he says that it's every single day you become chayv and karis. What's the issue between the Rambam and the Ravid, whether you become chayv and karis every single day or only once at the end of his life when he dies? So Rabbi Yosef Engel has in his Tshuvos, in the Ben Peros, that he thinks that they're arguing about this issue. If the nature of the mitzvah of Mila is due the act of removing the Arla, so then you have your whole life to do it. If you didn't do it today, so you'll do it tomorrow. By the time when you only come chayv in kares, when you've been mavatal the mitzvah entirely, when the guy dies and he hasn't performed the mitzvah of Mila, he hasn't removed the Arla. So that's the opinion of the Rambam. The Rambam held the nature of the mitzvah of Mila is to remove the Arla. And the Ravid and the Ramah over here is disagreeing, and their opinion is, no, the nature of the mitzvah of Mila is to be Gamal, so every single day, to be Mahul. Every single day, you don't have the status of Mahul. You've been Mavatal another mitzvah. It's a status issue. It's not an action issue. So if that's the case, every single day, you can be Mchayiv and Karis. Yeah.
According to the Ramah, if you're caught and died before getting Mahul,
they do Mila on Ketan and Mason.
So that's what they did?
It's a minig. It's in Hilchos Avelos. It's here? Is that here? I remember from Hilchos Avelos. Yeah, it's in Hilchos Avelos. It's quoted here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you would get
Karis? Would you get Karis? He's saying if you... How could a Katan become Chayiv Karis?
No, that's only
this issue is not only relevant to a guy who, to the Katan who doesn't perform Mila, or a person who doesn't perform Mila, it's also relevant to pushing off a Mila. The Shulchan Aruch and Tzimei Reish Samech Beis Sifkat and Gimel, I'm sorry, the Taz and Simei Reish Samech Beis, Sifkat and Gimel discusses a child who isn't well. And the first time, therefore, you have to push off the Mila. The first time you're going to be able to do the Mila is on a Thursday. So the Taz's opinion is, over there, that you don't do the Mila on a Thursday. Why not? Because the Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos that Ein Mafligin Besvina Gimel Yomim Kodem HaShabbos. We don't go on a boat trip 3 days before Shabbos. So too, because you're going to probably have to be Mechal Shabbos and Shabbos because of the boat trip. So too, we talked about this with regards to elective surgery. So you have a Tinoch over here who just got better on a Thursday. It's like an elective surgery. Why are you doing it on a Thursday? Push it off. So then he says, the Taz says, well, what about Friday? So he says, no, if there's you might come to Mechal Shabbos if you do it on Thursday, certainly if you do it on a Friday. So the Taz says, if it's on a Thursday or a Friday, you have to push it off until Sunday. That's why many people have the misimpression, if you have a Mila Shalom Bizman, already it's going to be on a Sunday. People had a bad impression. The show, the Shach and Simen Reish Samech Vav. And Yerches disagrees, and the Shach says, the Gemara there says in Masechet Shabbos, if you're going a Dvar Mitzvah, you're allowed to take a boat trip 3 days before Shabbos. So this is no Dvar Mitzvah greater than doing a Milah. So certainly you should be allowed to do the Milah on a Thursday and even on a Friday. Why even on a Friday? Because the Gemara says the hardest day after a Milah is the third day. So if you can do it on Thursday, you could do it on a Friday also, because Friday is easier even than a Thursday. So Shach says, whatever day the bris falls out of Milah Shel Bizmanu, you should do it on that day. Obviously not Shabbos, but if it falls out on a Thursday or a Friday, you should do it on a Thursday or a Friday. Most hold like the Shach, they don't push off every bris till every Milah Shel Bizmanu that falls out on a Thursday or a Friday to Sunday. But some of them have different pshuras. I think Katzenstein, I talked to him about this a few times. I think he'll do it on a Thursday, but not on a Friday, because I don't know. It's his pshat with them. And Pisrei Tshuva and Simen Reish Samech Beis have cut in Beis quotes from the Noda Yehuda that some people had the minhag that whenever they had a Milah Shel Bizmanu, they pushed it off to Erev Pesach. Nowadays they push it off to Sunday. Why? Because Erev Pesach you get out of making a siyum. So the Noda Yehuda says a terrible minhag, the mavatel a mitzvah. And not only that, he claims every single day that you push off a meal, you're not just pushing to do it being mavatel zrizos. Zrizim akdim le mitzvah. Yeah, you'll do it tomorrow, you'll do it Sunday, you'll do it Erev Pesach. No, every day you push off a bris, the Shloi Bizmana, you're being mavatel a mitzvah, a different mitzvah. I say it's not just zrizos, because every single day, if the mitzvah is to be gemal, to be mahul, so every single day that you don't have that status, you've been mavatel a mitzvah. I say. 2 years ago, I made a Milah Shel Bizmanu for my son, and happened to be, I said last year, happened to be the first day was Sunday. But I felt bad. Because it looks bad that Rav is making Milah Shel Bizmanu on a Sunday. The people have this impression already that Milah Shel Bizmanu is a Sunday. I was going to make it Friday, you know. What could I do? The Gilead Marsha says over here, Simen Reish Samech, also along these lines, if you have two children to do a meal on the same day, you have a Milah Bizmanu and a Milah Shel Bizmanu, so which one comes first? So Gilead Marsha says that you do the Milah Bizmanu first, because Chaviva Mitzvah B'Shaita. The Milah Shel Bizmanu is not the proper time, so do it afterwards. The Dvar Avram, though, has a tshuva, again, this is in the binder, the Dvar Avram has a tshuva where he claims that, no, just the reverse. The Milah Bizmanu, you have the whole 8th day. It's just an issue of Zrizus. But the Dvar Avram says, the Milah Shel Bizmanu, who says it goes based on days? Maybe every hour, or every minute that you're delaying the bris, you're being mavatel a separate mitzvah saseh. So the Dvar Avram claims it could be that if the issue, the nature of the mitzvah milah is to be mahul, so maybe every single second that you delay the bris, you'd be mavatel a separate mitzvah, being mahul for that minute. So therefore, the Dvar Avram claims that the milah Shel Bizmanu you should do first. You can't delay it at all. The milah Bizmanu, you have the whole 8th day, is an issue of Zrizus. But the milah Shel Bizmanu, you don't have that issue. Therefore, this also comes up with the milah Shel Bizmanu. Sometimes you have the 7 days meyes lies. So 7 days meyes lies might turn out at 3 p.m. It might turn out at 4 p.m. Whenever the doctor says 7 days from whenever the doctor said that the child could have a milah. So some people say you should do it as soon as possible. I don't think you have to go. The first milah Shel Bizmanu I made, both my sons were milah Shel Bizmanu. So the first one we made, I was getting all nervous with the hours and this and that. But in the minute, most people, nobody calculates. Even though every yeshiva guy knows the Dvar Avram, we calm down, you know. They try and do it that day, but you don't have to go crazy with the hours. People have to get there and make a nice bris. But anyway, but that's the issue with the Dvar. This issue might also be related to what is the nature of the mitzvah of Milah. Once we're talking a little bit about the children who are sick, so I wanted to mention this. The Shulchan Aruch says in Simen Reish Samech Beis Siv Beis that there's a difference between two different types of sicknesses. There's a cholish b'chol aguf, and there's a cholish she'enu b'chol aguf. A cholish she'enu b'chol aguf you do once the child gets better. Right away. Then there's a cholish b'chol aguf, where you have to wait 7 days meyes liyes. What is a cholish b'chol aguf? What's a cholish she'enu b'chol aguf? So the Marik writes, if it's a suffix sakana, that's a cholish b'chol aguf. And if it's not a suffix sakana, that's a cholish she'enu b'chol aguf. So the Shach writes, even if it's not a cholish she'yesh b'sakana, cholish she'enu b'sakana, so what does that mean? The guy can't function, so he says, let's say the child has a diaper rash, so we push off the bris. We don't push off the bris for that. So it's not every cholish she'enu b'sakana, but basically his child is sick, but not sick enough that we'd call it a cholish she'yesh b'sakana, but he has to have something more than a diaper rash. That's not good enough to push off the bris. But anything more than that is would already be a cholish she'enu b'sakana. You push off the bris. When the child gets better, you would do it. And if it's a cholish b'chol aguf, if it's a suffix sakana, you push it off 7 days, mi'eis li'eis. This halacha of 7 days, mi'eis li'eis, the Binyan Tzion writes is d'oraisa. Rabbi Tendler also felt like that. That the 7 days meyes leis is deraisa, and if you would do it before the 7 days, Rabbi Tendler said you need hatovas damris. That's a big chiddush. Most poskim disagree with the binyan. Nishmas Avram quotes from Shlomo Zalman. I've heard like that from Shechta too, but many hold like that. That the 7 days is not meyes, is not deraisa. You wouldn't need hatovas damris if you did it earlier. What, there's some cases though that are a little bit of a gray area. What's called a cholisha b'chol aguf, what's not called a cholisha b'chol aguf. So just a few examples, kind of a guideline, but there are a million scenarios. But the Rav Moshe has a tshuva about a child that's underweight, which comes up by almost every premature baby. So a child that's underweight, you don't have to wait 7 days. Some of them have their line in the sand, 5 pounds, or whatever. Some will do 4.5 pounds, some 6 pounds. It has to be a minimum of weight. So you don't have to wait 7 days, meyes leis, from the time the child is 5 pounds. Once the child is 5 pounds, you can do the meal right away. That's not a cholisha b'chol aguf. But then you have a similar case where it is a cholisha b'chol aguf. Let's say the child can't eat on its own. Can't suck. Well, a lot of premature babies can't eat on their own. They have to eat with a tube, but someone has to feed them, but they can't suck. Most poskim hold that that's a cholisha b'chol aguf. Knowing how to eat is a cholisha b'chol aguf. You can't survive like that. Or the Nishmas Avram has that if you put a child in an incubator because he can't control his own body temperature, that's a cholisha b'chol aguf. So you have to wait 7 days, meyes leis, from the time the child comes out of the incubator. The poskim do point out that sometimes they put children in incubators just because it's more convenient. Let's say you want to put children on the lights for the bilirubin, and the lights are attached to every incubator, has the lights. So the fact you might come, your baby's in the incubator, and it doesn't mean that he's needed to be in an incubator. It was just the thing that was attached to the lights. So you have to know why the child, they always ask, why was the child in the incubator? But if he was in the incubator because he couldn't control his own body temperature, that's a cholisha b'chol aguf. If the Nishmas Avram also says if the child has a fever, this we know from Hilchos Shabbos, if the child has a fever, so that might reflect an infection. So they draw a line in the Nishmas Avram, quotes from Shlomo Zalman, if it's 100.4 or higher, it's a cholisha b'chol aguf. I don't know why 100.4.
That's what the doctors say.
That's what they say? Really?
Yeah.
Well, does that correspond to something in Celsius, a round number in Celsius? It's not a round number, it's interesting. Anyway, 100.4, so that's a cholisha b'chol aguf. If it's less than 100.4, I didn't know that. Very good information. If it's less than 100.4, that's not a cholisha b'chol aguf. We know this from Hilchos Shabbos, the Nishmas Avram, quotes from Shlomo Zalman, the child's on antibiotics. So then, of course, that's a cholisha b'chol aguf. Infection is always a cholisha b'chol aguf. There's a machlokes, though, that I've discovered between Shlomo Zalman and Rav Shechter, which is an interesting point, which is when do you start counting the 7 days meyes leis if a child's on antibiotics? So Dr. Abraham quotes from Shlomo Zalman, when the child is no longer symptomatic from the infection, you know, the fever went down or whatever. Rav Shechter held this whenever you finish the regimen of antibiotics. That's interesting. It could result in a difference of a few days. Dr. Steinberg notes that sometimes they give children antibiotics prophylactically to prevent an infection. Every child that's born with XYZ circumstance, they give them an antibiotic. But we never really knew that the child had any infection. So that's more of a grayer area again. What do you do with that situation? But again, probably most people wait 7 days meyes leis if the child is on antibiotics. There is an issue which needs to be a little bit clarified, and that's in the Shulchan Aruch. And Reish Sama Gimel, he discusses what's the story with the Tinok Hayarok. So Tinok Hayarok, by the way, does not mean green. The child is not green. He's not Kermit. Yarok means gold. How do we know that? Because the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah, everyone makes this mistake. Esther Yerakrak Haisa. Esther was green. Esther was not green. She was not green. The Gemara already points out that we find by a contradiction. There's a contradiction between the Gemara Maseches Sukkah and Yushalmi. The Gemara says Maseches Sukkah that Esther Kayarok is possible. But the Zayar says, I'm not Yushalmi. The Zayar says that Esther Kayarok is Mehuda. That's the best. And the Gemara claims there's never a contradiction between the Nigel and the Nister. So how do you have this? The Mishnah says it's Yarok is a puzzle, and the Zayar says Yarok is Meshubach, is the best. So he claims, no, the Mishnah says Yarok Kakarsi is puzzle. Yarok Kakarsi is green. Yarok, which is Meshubach, is gold. It's a yellowish color, tan. So when the Gemara says Esther Yarokrak Hasa, it means she was tan. So if you see a child that's drawn, which we understand now, if you see a child which is drawn this, they look tan. So that's Esther, a little yellowish. So Esther Kayarok, a child who's Yarok means that he's gold. Why is he gold? So that's because the bilirubin is not functioning. But Tendler pointed out that there's two types of bilirubin. There's a pathological bilirubin, which is because the child's not well, and then there's physiological bilirubin, which he pointed out that the bilirubin, elevated levels of bilirubin come because the liver isn't functioning properly. But he claimed that every liver doesn't begin functioning until the fifth day after the child is born. So every child will be slightly elevated levels of bilirubin. So therefore, Rabbi Tendler was not happy with the psak of most poiskim. Most poiskim are Shlomo Zalman. Huh?
What is the type of
He didn't mention these terms. Physiological bilirubin, isn't that mine? Physiological bilirubin and pathological bilirubin.
If he has too much bilirubin and it's not filled up by the liver, then and bilirubin is too high and he has jaundice. So
right.
Which is pathological,
right.
I guess.
No, there's two types. So he claimed.
The level of bilirubin contained in the bloodstream decides if it's for the pathological or not.
No, not necessarily. That's what he claimed. That's what he claimed. That if it's pathological means there's something wrong with the liver. Physiological means that the liver hasn't yet begun. There's nothing wrong. It's part of the normal, jump starting of the liver. The liver doesn't start functioning normally until 5 days after the birth. 5 days after the child is born. So the fact that it has elevated levels of bilirubin is not necessarily a concern. So most poskim hold that if it's a high, very high level of bilirubin. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman writes like this, this is the stand-up psak. If it's a very high level of bilirubin, so then they consider that chodesh b'chol haguf. If it's not such a high level of bilirubin, so then they don't consider it to be a chodesh b'chol haguf. So Rabbi Tendler is not happy with this. Why can he claim the man of shach? If it's a problem, if it's physiological, it's never a problem. It doesn't make a difference what number the bilirubin is. If it's pathological, even if it's a little bit raised, So then we should wait 7 days mi'es li'es. So therefore, Rabbi Tendler thinks that there should only be two extremes. If it's pathological, 7 days mi'es li'es. If it's physiological, that it's not a problem with the liver functioning, it's just that it takes a few days to get started, and every child is a little bit jaundiced, so then Rabbi Tendler claims, you should do the mila now, there's no reason to push off the bris at all. The problem is with Rabbi Tendler's pshat is that the Shulchan Aruch, if you read the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't correspond to anything. The Shulchan Aruch says, Rabbi Haber, who used to run the fourth year local Maisa before me, used to point it out every year in the Shia. To Rabbi Tendler, but I gave up on that practice. So over here, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Kadosh Shu Yarok." If a child is yellow, so then you do the bris when his color returns to normal. But the problem is, according to Rabbi Tendler, it's not the case. You have to wait 7 days mi'es li'es. If he's sick, you have to wait 7 days mi'es li'es. If he's not sick, so then it doesn't correspond, so you should do it now. Yeah. What do you do? Right when the color returns to normal. But most poskim are of the opinion that no, if it's that's talking about a child has an elevated bilirubin. So a little elevated bilirubin, you do it, the child's a little yellow, so then you do it when the color returns to normal. And if it's very elevated, the child's very sick, severe liver dysfunction, then you would have to even wait 7 days mi'es li'es. But most poskim would not do a mila on a jaundiced baby, even if we knew that it was physiological. They would wait to figure out, either wait for two things. There's a big machlekes poskim, what do you wait for? So Shulchan Aruch tells you when the color returns to normal, but still there's a machlekes poskim, with Shlomo Zalman, Avnei Nezer, Tzitzel Yezer's opinion is once the level starts dropping, because once it starts dropping, everybody knows it's physiological, because it's starting to come back down. The doctors will tell you. So once it starts to come back down, it's on its way down, even if the child's color is not returned to normal, so those poiskim would do a bris, even on a slightly joint. Even though the color hasn't fully returned to normal, but it's on its way down, then already you know it's physiological, they would do it right away. Minchas Yitzchak, Rabbi Yashiv, Rabbi Bleich has an article about this in his Contemporary Halachic Problems. They all insist they have to wait till everything returns to normal. You have to wait till the color all returns to normal. I don't know. Rabbi Tendler is very into being doing the bris on the jaundiced child. To me, there's a hesitation for another reason, and that is the Shulchan Aruch. I had a friend who wrote an article about this also. I'm hesitant. The Shulchan Aruch writes over here in Simirei Samech Gimel Sif Aleph. I heard something like this from Shechter, that the Shulchan Aruch says over here, you have to be very careful ma'od. We don't do any mila on a child that we're even afraid is sick. You can do mila after a while. You can push it off. Once you do a bris on a child that has sakana, if it turns out there was a sakana here, you can never take it back. Whereas a bris, you can push off you could push off a little bit. So Shech explained it a little bit even further, and that is that the Gemara says, we explained this in Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh, that the Gemara says in Maseches Bava Kama, that Alecha Haragnu Kol Hayom, we kill ourselves to you every day, Ribbono Shel Olam, Zumila. That every single day, the mitzvah of Mila is always a Suffix Sakana. The child is undergoing an operation. And we explain that whenever someone is besafek sakana, so all of a sudden now we start being afraid, even for far-fetched chashoshos. That was one of our explanations for the Magid Mishnah's pshat, that you could do a shar tzarecha for chol sheyesh bo sakana, was because once a person is in a situation of safek sakana, so he's already he's in a precarious situation, so any little thing might tip the scales one way or another. So the child over here is already in a safek sakana because he's doing niwa. So yeah! Join this. What? Come on. What's going to happen? The child's already feeling physiological joint, pathological joint. Yeah. What's going to happen? Physiological joint. The answer is the child's already in a suffix sakana. So what are we pushing the envelope for? So any little thing, most moilim will push off the meal. So the way probably for the color to return to normal. Yeah.
Just a question. How do you know the difference between one
and
the other?
He probably also has that indicator that if it starts to go down. That's what most of them give. But they, even if you could determine an outside circuit, I don't know. I don't know how else you determine it. Is there any other way? I don't know. One more thing about this with the sick children. So the Shulchan Aruch says that if you have two brothers that are Mesu Machmas Mila, so you don't do the Mila on the third child. The Rambam... quoted by the Shulchan Aruch, disagrees. The Rambam adds to that that you only don't do it right away, but you wait that shigadov ischazik kocho until the third child is old enough, then he's strong, then you do the milah. So in the Piskei Tshuva, he quotes from the Noda Yehuda, who disagreed with this Rambam. It doesn't say that in the Gemara. The Gemara says if you have two brothers die from milah, you don't do milah on the third at all. The Rambam added on if it's once the child gets older, you should do milah. So the Noda Yehuda says if he had enough strength, he would argue with this Rambam. You should never do the milah on the third child. Presumably, the Shulchan Aruch here is talking about hemophilia, that if two brothers died, so we're afraid that the third brother is going to die. The problem is the Shulchan Aruch discusses if you have two brothers from the father's side. Hemophilia, I think, generally travels on the mother's side. It's an X chromosome, hereditary, not the Y chromosome. So it's hard to understand, really, with two brothers from the father's side. But it's, everyone assumes the Shulchan Aruch is talking about hemophilia. Rabbi Tamla usually discusses hemophilia. I don't remember him discussing it this year. What do you do about a child that's a hemophiliac? It's a big machlekes hapoiskim. What is the status of this child? Is this child a chayla, or is the child not a chayla? So Rabbi Neuvert holds that the child is a chayla, and he's pater from Mila. That's it. He's a chayla sheyesh bo sakana. Rishon Zalman disagreed. How can you call the child a chayla? Child's walking around, fine. He's playing the playground with everybody else. How is he a chayla? So, how can you do the Mila without risking his life? So the answer is there's two ways. One way, which is really the popular way of doing Mila for hemophiliac, which is the reason why a person is hemophiliac because he's missing, I only know this from every time, where he's missing one of the blood clotting factors. So hemophiliacs generally, if in case they get cut, they travel around with like an EpiPen full of that blood clotting factor. He used to tell a story with a kid in the shear, blah, 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 whole thing. So what you can do is you can inject the child with the blood clotting factor, and then you could do the meal. It has like a window of like 24 hours where the blood will clot, and he's like everybody else. So Shlomo Zalman held, you have to inject the child with that blood clotting factor and do that hormone therapy in order to give him the bris. So Rabbi Neuvert held, obviously the child's not obligated to do that. The child is a chayla, not obligated to do that. But that's one possibility of doing the... Shlomo Zalman held, he's not considered a chayla, and therefore you'd have to use this blood clotting factor. The other way they could do mila is with lasers. That's where Rabbi Blayach has a whole article about lasers and mila, because it coagulates right away because of the laser. But the hormone therapy is better out. Yeah.
According to after you give the kid a shot,
then
the kid
considered not a chayla. Yeah. So he held the child's a chayla now. He's not obligated to do all that. I don't know. It's quoted by Dr. Abraham. The Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos has a machlokas about a child who is a noilad mahul. Is he chayv in a tafas dam bris or not? Child's born mahul. So the Gemara's suffix is, and where explains it suffix, is whether or not the child is, if you know at mohul, does that mean you're treated as mohul? Are we afraid, chayshina la'ala kvusha? Are we afraid that there is a suppressed arla somewhere here? That's why the Gemara also has a suffix whether or not we do a mila of a noilat mohul on Shabbos. The Gemara is not sure. If there's an arla kvusha, then you do the mila on Shabbos. If there's no arla kvusha, so then you can't do that toughest dambris on Shabbos. You can't do that toughest dambris on Shabbos. So we pass in a Shulchan Aruch, Reish Samech Gimel, Sif Dalad, Reish Samech Gimel, Sif Dalad, that a noilat mohul requires our toughest dambris. We're chashin on the arla kvusha. We're afraid that there's some sort of suppressed arla here, and the toughest dambris will solve that problem. But we paskin in Simen Reish Samech Vav Sif Yud that is not Derech Shabbos. So it's a we're chashin on whether there's an arla kvusha. Again, the Gemara had a suffix whether or not there's an arla kvusha there. I apologize, I said it wrong. We're afraid whether or not there's an arla kvusha there, or an arla mohul doesn't need toughest dambris at all. And then even if we're afraid that there's an arla kvusha, is it a vaday arla kvusha, in which case it would be Derech Shabbos, or it's a suffix arla kvusha? In which case, the toughest numbers would not be Derech HaShabbos. So we paskin that it's a suffix Arla Kvusha. There is an Arla Kvusha there, but it's a suffix. So he requires HaToughest Dambris. He's not considered a Mohu. But that HaToughest Dambris is not Derech HaShabbos. So Pisrei Tshuva and Simireish Samech Gimel, Sivka in Yud, references you to a Tshuva of the Mishkanes Yaakov. He doesn't tell you what the Mishkanes Yaakov says, though. He just says, Ayin Tshuva is Mishkanes Yaakov. But if you look at the Mishkanes Yaakov, he asks a very important question. He notes that the Rambam also paskins that a noilat mohu requires HaToughest Dambris because we're afraid there's an Arla Kvusha there, but it's not Derech HaShabbos. But yet the Rambam writes if a person is noilat mohu, he requires, he's allowed to eat truma before he's had that HaToughest Dambris. So he needs HaToughest Dambris because we're afraid there's an Arla there, but he's allowed to eat truma. So Mishkanes Yaakov asks, how are you allowed to eat truma? If there's an Arla there, Arla Kvusha, so then he should have the status of an Arla. Arla's not allowed to eat truma. So the Mishkanes Yaakov answers, and this answer is echoed by many others after him. Reb Chaim has the same answer in the Chidushei Reb Chaim, and not in the Rambam, but in the Chidushei Reb Chaim, and the Bitzel Aponovich has the same thing in the Zecher Yitzchak, where they say that the Gemara at some point abandoned that svara of Chashino La'arla Kvusha. The reason why you require a toughest dambris is not because we're afraid there's a suppressed arla there. How do you know? Because the Gemara there brings into what starts out a discussion of Noilat Mohu, a person who's born with a bris. Are we afraid this is suppressed arla? They need HaToughest Dambris now. Then the Gemara migrates into a discussion about the Gemara compares it to a ger shenizgayer after he had mila. Let's say a guy is a nachri, has mila, and then he converts. So the Gemara says, does he need HaToughest Dambris or not? So the Gemara compares that to the case of the noilat mohu. What does it have to do? The nachri had a mila when he was a guy. Of course he had, there was an arla there. But how could there be a suppressed arla? He already removed the arla. So at this point, the Mishkanes Yaakov claims the Gemara abandoned that svar of the Arla Kvusha. Now we are under a new assumption as to why you would require HaToughest Dambris. And it's not because it's an Arla Kvusha there, but it's rather because of a different principle. And that is that one of the Chalakim of the Mitzvah of Mila is not only Mila Priya, but is also, there's a third part of the Mitzvah of Mila, and that is HaToughest Dambris. There has to be some Dambris. So Noah Moa had no Dambris. A guy who was an Mila when he was a Nachri had no Dambris when he's a Jew, so perhaps you should require Dambris. And we pask in that mitzvah of HaToughest Dambris, you require it, you need HaToughest Dambris. Every child who's not with Mahu, I had a Mila when he was a guy, needs HaToughest Dambris. But that mitzvah of HaToughest Dambris is not Derech HaShabbos. Similarly, there's no bracha on HaToughest Dambris. Reis Samechei, Sif Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch says, there's no bracha on HaToughest Dambris. But they say, you see, that this Indian of HaToughest Dambris is not because we're afraid of Arla Kvusha, it's because it's a separate part of the Mila, which involves having dam. That's why many of the Paiskim were opposed to the clamps, which just basically cut off circulation for a certain period of time. If you didn't get exactly what it is, it cuts off circulation for a certain period of time, and then the skin dies, and you can take off the skin, and there's no blood in the surgery. It's also very cosmetic, because it's a clamp that goes around, as opposed to a cut, which the male does, which is the line, so it's not really cosmetic. The shape of the aver. This is better. So that's why they prefer that in the hospitals, and it's bloodless, so you get you can walk out, and there's no bandaging, no nothing. So but many of the Paiskim were opposed to it. The Sefer Bris has his whole historical, he records everybody was against the clamps, and a whole kokur is against it. Why? Because there's no HaToughest Dambris. This is a problem with the lasers also, is the laser coagulates the blood right away. There's no HaToughest Dambris. Ramosha wasn't sure if you require a toughest dambris. If you had a meal with a clamp, maybe you should require a toughest dambris later. He wasn't sure about that in the Chubis. But that's why everyone is opposed to it. Yeah.
So we wouldn't do that. I mean, you can't just do the clamp and then be matzif a little bit.
So that's what Rabbi Tam had his suggestion. Why not do a clamp but leave a little bit out and cut that with a knife?
Right.
Yeah, but I think he was saying that as a
suggestion, but that's not what we do.
Not what we do. He was saying that as like, if you have people who are insisting on using a clamp, do it like this.
Yeah.
I don't think he was suggesting that as the optimal method. Yeah.
In terms of the
Shalai
Trumas, we're saying
Trumas
didn't
need Tatavas Dambris. Yeah, it's a din in Oro, end up being an Oro. He just needs Tatavas Dambris. Yeah, exactly. This will have a relevance as to what is the procedure of Tatavas Dambris. The Meiri claims that Tatavas Dambris means to take off the whole upper layer of skin from the top of the Atara. It's a little graphic. Why? Because he says, the Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos that one of the Amoraim was trying to do Hatavas Dambris and he made his son into a Krush Shavcha. So he says, obviously this is a serious procedure. But the Orzarua claims that that's not what Hatavas Dambris is about. Hatavas Dambris is not about taking off the whole upper layer of skin. And we understand where the Miri is coming from. If it's about looking for an Orla Kvusha, where is the Orla Kvusha? We don't know. So he's maybe take off the whole upper layer. The Orzarua claims, and that's the Minig, that's the way we pass in that Tavas Dambris is just to be take out a little drop of blood. The Chazon Ish even claims, Shefa likes to quote this, you don't need to take out a drop of blood, you just nitzur hadam. If you press hard enough that the blood collects underneath the skin, that would also be called Tavas Dambris. That's not the, at least I've been to one Tavas Dambris with the Rebbe Katzenstein, he did that. They used a little needle, a prick, and took out a drop of blood. There is a machlokes, it's recorded by the Sefer HaBris, where do you do the Tavas Dambris? Do you do it on the place? Again, this might be relevant to this question of the Arla Kvusha. Is it supposed to be in the place where the Mila would have been, meaning where the Arha Arla attaches to the skin of the Gid? Is that where you should do the Hatavas Dambris, from where you would have cut the Arha Arla? Or do you do it from the Atara? So again, if you're looking for an Arla Kvusha, maybe you do one drop of blood on the Atara. If you're trying to recreate the Hatavas Dambris that should have been there by the Mila, so maybe you do it where the Makom HaMila is. So the Chazon Ish claims you do it on the Atara. Others claim that you do it on the place where the Arla would have come out. So I think it's different minhagim, who you talk to, what the minig is about that. Where do you do the Hatavas Dambris? It takes 2 seconds. Well, at least the one I was at took 2 seconds. It was a Geirus, that's why there was a bad. I wasn't there to watch. It was a Geirus, so they needed a base there. Shulchan Aruch says in the Simon Reish Samuel Bey, Sif Aleph. Coming back a little bit. We skipped to Reish Samach Gimel, now we're going to come back to Reish Samach Beis. The Shulchan Aruch says in Simi Reish Samach Beis, if Aleph, by commenting on the Pasuk of Ayom HaShmini Yuma Basar Alasa, that you're supposed to do Mila Bayom. And the Mishnah says in Maseches Megillah, any mitzvah that's supposed to be Bayom, you start as a mitzvah min HaNeitzachama. B'diyevit, you could do it at Alois HaShachar. That's what the Ramah says. So B'diyevit, you could do Mila at Alois HaShachar. Let's say you're in a rush, and it's in the later time of the year where the Zman Tefillah, Neitzachama is later, so maybe you'd be tempted to do a bris before HaNeitzachama. So the Ramah says that's only B'diyevit, and the place can really strongly discourage it. Even though everyone's in a rush to get to work and you want people to come, you're not supposed to do a bris before HaNeitzachama. You could do it before HaNeitzachama, B'diyevit, but it shouldn't be done. So you should push off the bris a little bit till after HaNeitzachama. But let's say you push it off a little bit later and you'll get more people there. So what do you do if you have a conflict between Zriz and Magdim and the Mitzvah? There's always a conflict to do, particularly by Mila, to do the Mila as early as possible, right after an Etzachama. But there's also an Indian of Beroi Vam, having people there with the Bris. So what do you do if you have a conflict between these two things? So the Stechemet quotes a Machloikis about that. It's already quoted in the Be'er Heitev, not here, elsewhere. What do you do about that? And he quotes that it's a machlekes ha-paiskim. The Radvaz's opinion was that Zrizos takes precedence over Beroi Vam. How does he know? Because the Gemara says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that when we blow Tkiya Shofar on Rosh Hashanah, we blow it by Musaf. Why do we blow by Musaf? Because of the Gzeiros HaMalchus. We couldn't blow by Shachar, so we blow it by Musaf. So it sounds like we're not for the Gzeiros HaMalchus, we would have blown by Shachar. But why would we have blown by Shachar? Won't there be more people there, Musaf? No, we all know by Shul, there are going to be more people later on in Shul. You wait longer, there'll be more people. So we should have always done by Musaf, but Raivam. So you see that, no, we would have preferred to do it by Shachris. The only reason we don't is Zeres HaMalchus, but we do it, so we do it by Musaf. We would have preferred by Shachris, because reason by Gdimel Mitzvah takes precedence over Raivam. And the Chacham Tzvi disagreed with the Ravaz, and he argued on that Raya from the Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah, because you could say there, we don't know people are going to come. Yeah, we assume people will come as Shul goes on, but we don't know. But if you would know for certain that people tell you, we're coming late, You know, so then, and will only come if it's later, so then maybe Beroi Vam takes precedence over his reason. Of his reason, Magdim Lel Mitzvah. So, we negotiate this situation. You make a meal at a time that's early enough so that people can come. Rav Sternbach quotes in his Sefer, the Tshuvas V'Hanhagos from the Chazon Ish, until 9 o'clock, you're all right. You don't have to start cheshbonning his reason, Magdim Lel Mitzvah. You have till 9. After 9 already, then it's not right. Just to get more people to come, to make a 9:30 minion for a meal, he claims it's not right. But then already you should be makbid on this reason, like the movement says. But till 9 o'clock, he claims it's okay. The Pisrei Tshuva, Reish Samech Beis, have cut in Beis, quotes from the Shvus Yaakov, that when they make a bris on Shabbos, he gets all upset that Chazanim spend so much time on the Nigunim that they start to do the bris after Chatzos. So he claims after Chatzos, that's no longer in the parasha of Zrizos. Then you've been Mavatel Zrizos. 9:30 is a problem with Jesus. 12 o'clock, you've been Mavatel Jesus. So he claims you should never go past 12 o'clock. The Sefer Eitzar Bris claims, you see from here that that's not called biker anymore. You're supposed to do the meal in the morning. So after you pass 12 o'clock, it's no longer the morning. It's a separate time period. And one definitely should not do that. So Chanarach says in Simen Reish Samach Beis, the Ramah says in Simen Reish Samach Beis, Sif Aleph, that if you by accident did a mila, not by accident, if you did a mila at night, which is possible, so then you need Hatavas Dambris. Then he says, but if you did a mila before the eighth day, so you don't need Hatavas Dambris, even though that's also no good. It's also no good, but you don't need Hatavas Dambris. The Shach disagrees and he says, what svar does it make to distinguish between these two items, doing a mila at night, which is possible, mila toches, which is possible, either way, you should require Hatavas Dambris. Then the Pisrei Tshuva, this quotes from the Shagas Aryeh, and the Shagas Aryeh's shita throughout Hilchos Mila is, you'll notice, every time Hatavas Dambris comes up, Shagas Aryeh says, no, you missed the boat, Hatavas Dambris is over. Once the Arla is gone, there's no longer Hatavas Dambris. You can't make it up later. So the Shagas Aryeh claims, in neither situation should you do Hatavas Dambris. Shach thinks in both, Pisrei Tshuva claims in neither. And the Ramah is his funny compromise between Teiches, you don't need Hatavas Dambris, and Balayla, you do need Hatavas Dambris. What's the pshat in the Ramah? So they quote in the Achronim quote from Reb Chaim, and everyone has the same pshat. The Devar Yechezkel has this pshat, the Stipel has this pshat. That the pshat in the Ramah is that there's a unique mitzvah, like we said earlier, a unique mitzvah of Hatavas Dambris is not to make up for the Arla Klusha, any of those in Yanim. But there's a separate mitzvah of Hatavas Dambris. So it could be that the Ramah held Hatavas Dambris is kosher toches. There's no halach of waiting to the eighth day. For Hatavas Dambris, halacha waiting to the eighth day for Mila. Who said there's such halacha by Hatavas Dambris? But it could be the Ramah held, even Hatavas Dambris is possible at night. Just like it's not Lecha Shabbos. So it could be that the Ramah is discussing, he's not making a compromise. Both situations are possible, and one you need Hatavas Dambris and one not. He's discussing the mitzvah of Hatavas Dambris. And it could be the Ramah held Hatavas Dambris is kosher toches, but it's possible by Laila. That's Simen Reish Samach Beis. Let's skip now. We did Reish Samach Gimel. We'll move to Reish Samach Dalet. The beginning of Reish Samach Dalet, Sif Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch discusses who is kosher to do a milah. So the Gemara says in Maseches Avodah Zarah that a Nachri is for sure possible to do a milah. But there's two reasons why a Nachri is possible to do a milah. Two possibilities. One possibility is because the Pasuk says Va'ata as Brisi Tishmar. That you have to be a Bar Bris. And a Nachri is not a Bar Bris. Or it could be because the Pasuk says himo yimo, and you have to be chayv in mila, and a nachri is not chayv in mila. So the Gemara says, what's the difference between these two reasons? Whether it's because you have to be a bar bris, or because you have to be chayv in mila. So the Gemara says, a nafkamina for woman. Because a woman is, it's funny, we would have said the other way. But the Gemara says that a woman is not a bar bris, but she is moho, because nashim command the mal yadamian. A woman is like a moho, but she's not a bar bris. It's interesting, we would have said the other way. But so the Gemara asks, well, what about Tzipora? So what about Tzipora? So the Gemara says, Tzipora has this tupshatim, either that she told someone else to do it, or she began it, the Moshe Rabbeinu finished it, but they get out of the Raya of Tzipora. So the Gemara says, depends on these two reasons, why is it Nachri possible, whether or not a woman can make Mila. Taisus there as a machlekes harishonim, how should we paskin? Is a woman kosher for Mila, or is a woman possible for Mila? The Shulchan Aruch here says that a woman is kosher for Mila, but he says that Yisrael Gadol is better. Who called him the Kulam? And then the Ramah goes on, V'yeshoimrim isha lo timo. We shouldn't let a woman do Mila. Shulchan Aruch says she can, but Yisrael Gadol is better. Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah says that she shouldn't do Mila. Sounds like you don't require a tavas dambris, but it shouldn't be done. The Sefer HaBris has a very interesting discussion, Rabbi Tendler mentioned once, a few times, actually. Let's say you have a scenario, you have a conflict between a person who's in a far-flung, exotic place, He's in New Zealand, I don't know. And he has to make a milah, and he can fly in a mile, but the mile can't get there by a milah bismana. It's too hard to arrange. So if the mile will come, it'll be a milah shalom bismana. Or he could have a female Jewish pediatrician, he can't have a nachri do it, but he could have a female pediatrician do it, if she's Jewish. So should he have a woman do it, bismana, or Yisrael Gadol do it, shalom bismana? Which is better? A woman bismana or Yisrael Gadol shalom bismana? So Sefer Abris has that discussion. Interesting discussion. Either way, it says in the Shulchan Aruch here clearly, a nachri is no good for mila. And the Ramah says if a nachri does mila, the Ramah says if a nachri does mila, he has to do hatafas dambris. So again, here the Pisrei Tshuva calls him the Shagasari. He pipes up. He says, "What? There's no purpose of dambris. It's over. Fardik. It's done. Nothing you can do. It's over." So the Shagasari says, "No atavas dambris again," and the Ramah says, "No, you should do atavas dambris for a nachri." Could be again the Ramah is saying a nachri is possible not only for mila, but he's possible for the mitzvah of hatavas dambris. What about a mumar or mechal Shabbos before hesia? Mechal Shabbos is called terakula. So the Ramah says a mumar is no good. Ramah says a mumar is no good. And the Ramah says a tshuva. Ramah writes, "Even need hatavas dambris if a mumar does mila." Rabbi Kiva Eger quotes from Taisus that Taisus disagreed that a mumar la relos, even lakala Torah kula, is kosher. And therefore he certainly would not need Hatavas Dambris. Of Vosner writes like that in Chuvas, in the Shevet Alevi. So some you have this range. Some held if a mumar does a mila, you need even Hatavas Dambris. Some held, Rabbi Kiva Eger quotes that Taisus' opinion is that a mumar is kosher for mila. And this happens. You have a reform or a conservative mile does mila, the status of a mumar. So be a shayla if you need hatavas dambris, maybe whole shayla.
If you have a stam doctor who doesn't know anything, he's
shomer Torah mitzvahs or he's a mumar?
That's
a bigger question. That's bigger than our it's for the AP course. Reish tamach dalet sif beis. So the Shulchan Aruch says he can be mal with anything. In fact, the pasuk says Tzipora used a stone. She used a tzar. Yeshua, in the times of Yeshua, again, they used charvos tzurim, where the pashup shot is that they used stone. Nonetheless, the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rambam, even though you could use anything, the minig is to use a sakin of barzel, a metal knife. So Rosh Hashulchan and others quote that some even interpreted that was the pshat by Yeshua. The pasuk says charvos tzurim, and the Targum Yonason says izem el charifim, a sharp knife. And some say the pshat, I think Reb Haigoin says that the pshat by Tzipora also says tsar. He says tsar means metal. Doesn't mean stone, because stone and metal are pretty similar. It's same. So he claims it means metal, it doesn't mean stone. That's where the minute came from, to use metal. So Rav Kasher has in the Torah Shlema, he claims that the Rambam has lots of things. We know this from Elsa. The Rambam has lots of things that are lehoitzi midei akaroim. So he claims that the Rambam specifically said you have to use a metal knife, because the Karoim thought that you had to use scissors, because the pasuk says charvos tzurim, which sounds like two blades, which is a scissor. So the Rambam Dafka went out of his way to say you have to use a sakin, a scalpel, as opposed to scissors. Rabbi Tam also pointed out that the minig is to use a double blade, two blades, because the pasuk says charv pifiyos biyodam, two blades. But in theory, you could use anything. That's why the whole discussion with the laser beams gets off the ground. Maybe you could even use laser beams. The Shulchan Aruch here, Reish Samach Dawud, Siv Gimel, Siv Hei, discusses what exactly is the procedure of mila. What does it entail? So the Shulchan Aruch says you have to remove the rive of the R that covers the Torah. If you remove less than rive of the R, that's called Tzitzim HaMa'akvim Es HaMila. That prevents the mila from being kosher. If you remove the rive of the R, but you didn't remove all of the R that covers the Torah, so that's called Tzitzim She'ein HaMa'akvim Es HaMila. We try and remove everything. All the yar that covers the atar, but it's kosher once you have a rive of the yar, you removed. If, let's say, you removed the rive, is it you supposed to go back and remove the rest later? So if it's on Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch says, of course, you don't go back and remove the rest later. Because once you see like yada, you don't go back. What about during the week? Do you go back and remove the rest? So that's a machlekes between the Rambam and the Tur. And the Ramah here passes like the Tur. The Ramah says in Sif Hei, even during the week, if you only cut off rive of the arla that covers the atara, rub of the skin that covers the atara, then you should go back and do the tzitzin sheinu ma'akvim later on. And the Rambam's opinion was, even during the week, you don't go back for the tzitzin sheinu ma'akvim. That's a famous machlekes between the Rambam and the Tur. The Brisker Rav has a piece in his Sefer on the Rambam, where he explains that the opinion of the Rambam is that Hidur Mitzvah is something that has to be enhanced, the Maisa Mitzvah itself. But Hidur Mitzvah is not an independent principle. So therefore, if you already did the Milah and it's kosher, once you remove the Rav of the Yar, there's no point in going back and removing the rest, because then it's just an act of Hidur Mitzvah. There's no such thing as an independent act of Hidur Mitzvah. And the Torah held that there is such an independent act of Hidur Mitzvah, and therefore it makes sense to go back and remove the Tzitz and Sheinim Ak from later, and that's the way the Ramah paskins. To show one second, the Pisrei Chuvin, Sivkan Tezvav, distinguishes between a strong child, a robust child that can handle going back later and, you know, removing more skin, as opposed to a weak child that can't handle it. Yeah, it's going to be a hard thing. Moyo will come back and start cutting again, so you have to be careful. Yeah?
So according to the Torah, it was on Shabbos?
On Shabbos, not.
Meaning even after
Shabbos. Milah is not Hidur Mitzvah, but after Shabbos, yeah. Go back later. Yes, I believe so. So it's the basic halacha is to remove the skin that covers the rib of the atara. Yeah, but what's called the atara? So the Shulchan Aruch, he would say, well, we know what the atara is. It's not that posh. The Shach over here in Sivkat and Tess quotes a machlekes between Harishayim, it's quoted by the Beis Yosef, between the Rambam and the Chacham Hasfardi. I don't know if the Chacham HaSfardi is quoted anywhere else in Shulchan Aruch, but over here he's quoted twice, two very prominent ways. So the Rambam's opinion is that the Atara is the whole tip of the Yaver. That's the Atara. So as long as you reveal your Megala, right of the tip of the Yaver, that's called the Atara, and you'll be that would be a Kasher Amila. The opinion of the Chacham HaSfardi is that it's not the whole tip of the Yaver, it's the widest part that's closest to the body. The widest circumference of the tip, that's the Atara. Rav Shechter claimed that it's machlekes about how what the word what type of atara are we talking about here. The Rambam understood it was like a crown, and the Chacham HaSfardi understood it more like a wreath, like the Greeks wore. So it's the widest part of the atara, what we would call the atara, that's closest to the body. That part is the atara. So then it'll be a big nafkamina. You have to remove roiv of what? For the Rambam, it's more area, but it's easier to get roiv. As long as you remove roiv of the skin that covers the whole atara, but not so hard. So then you already have a kosher amila. According to the Chacham HaSfardi, you have to remove a rive of the circumference of that widest part of the skin, that widest part of the atara. So you have less area to work with in order to gain rive. Then there's a further machlokes that the Sefer HaBris has within the opinion of the Chacham HaSfardi. If you assume in the Chacham HaSfardi that's the widest part of the tip of the yaver, close to the body, is it just that circumference, or perhaps behind that there is a charitz, there is a indentation, so which I think in Rabbi Tendler's diagrams is called the corona. So is that also called part of the atara? Is it just the widest circumference around the tip of the aver, or is it also the charitz that's behind it? So he quotes a machlekes hapaiskim about that. I think he says over there from the he has a tshuva there from the Binyan Siyan that he was asked to shaila by Rav Shimshon Fal Hirsch. Someone went to mikvah and he saw that his friend's mila didn't have roiv of the charitz, so they asked the shaila, is the mila kosher or not? So they were machmer that not only do you need roiv of that circumference, but you need roiv of the charitz. However, the Binyan Siyan quotes there an important principle, which is it's a very important principle, which is just like we say by Hilchos Shechita, which we don't learn anymore in Hilchos Smicha. Over here in the Smicha program, but when we used to learn Shechita in the Smicha program, everybody knew there's a halacha in Hilchos Shechita called Rav Mitzuyin Eitzel Shechita Mumchen Hein. You don't. Most of the people who have come to do Shechita are Mumchen. They know what they're doing, so there's no point in questioning it afterwards. So too, most of the people who know come to do Mila know what they're doing. So Binyan Siyan says we shouldn't get into the practice of questioning a Mila afterwards, but he says the Mila. So you probably assume the Mila was kosher the first time. But the halacha really is, if you pass like the Chacham HaSfardi, that you need not only roiv of the circumference, but roiv of the charitz too. And most I think the Shach passes like the Chacham HaSfardi. But then things get even more complicated, because the Shulchan Aruch over here, Reish Samech Dalet Sif Vav, discusses, this happens by the way, discusses a katan that's mesubo barbasar, if it's a chubby baby. So sometimes you do mila properly the first time, but then since the child is chubby, so the skin from the gid will come back over, start to creep back over the atara. And if you leave it like that, it could adhere to the atara. A male should tell a parent to have a chubby baby that they should, you're supposed to put alcohol there or something to constantly wash it out to make sure that the skin does not re-adhere to the atara, but it could happen. So if that happens, the meal was done properly the first time, but now the skin has re-adhered to the atara and he looks like he's an Ariel. So the Shulchan Aruch says, then you have an issue of Maris Ayin. Because it looks like he never had a proper milah done. So there are, so you have to fix that. That's a problem of Marasayin. So the Ramah quotes from the Trumas Hadesha, and as long as you have a miut of the Atara is visible. By a first time you do Mila, you need the whole Atara, you need Rav of the Atara. Here, since a Mila was done properly, as long as part of the Atara is visible, that's good enough. That's a discussion over here in the Shach and the Taz. Do we accept that Trumas Hadesha? The Ramah is quoting a Trumas Hadesha. So Shach, if we accept that. But either way, the Ramah says, when you're only dealing with the Marasayin, it's enough if you have a little bit. But when do we check whether or not this child, the Katana Mesubo Bebasar, when do we check whether or not any part of the Atar is visible or not? So the Shulchan Aruch says you check at the time that the Aver is Bekishoy. That's when you check. So even the Katana is Mesubo Bebasar, but if the Aver is Bekishoy, it will be less likely that it will look like an Arel. But what about every other Mila? When do we check that the Mila is kosher? When do we check that Rav of the Atara is revealed? Is that when the time that the Aver is Bekishoy, or the time that the Aver is Rafa? So that's the discussion that the Shach and Sifkot in Yud Beis, again, quotes from the Chacham HaSfardi. The Shach quotes from the Chacham HaSfardi that only over here do you check when the time is the Aver is Bekishoy, when it's only dealing with a Marasayin. But the first time you do the Mila, so then you have to make sure that Rav of the Atara is revealed at the time that the Aver is Berafa. And the Shach disagrees with the Chacham HaSfardi. He says, no, it's always when the Aver is Bekishoy. The problem is, the Pischei Tshuva over here, Sifkat and Tezayin, says that we pass like the Chacham HaSfardi, not like the Shach. So Sefer Bris, who was a Mayo, points out, if you put all the Chumras over here together, it comes up as a little draconian. I mean, he says, if you have to pass like the Chacham HaSfardi, that you need a Rav of the widest part of the circumference of the Atara, the part that's closest to the body, and you need the Charitz also, and it has to be at the time that the Aver is Berafa, so then you might err on the side of cutting off too much skin. So the Sefer Bris says you have to be careful with all of these chumras to make sure that you don't endanger the child. Yeah?
I'm sorry, isn't it like the Metzius that even when the Aver is Bekishoy, that even someone who's an Arul Gomer is not?
Yes, but the time is, but the question is, if you hold the Chacham HaSfardi, that is the time when the Aver is Berafa, and you have to cut off the widest part of the circumference, and it includes the Charitz, you might get, you're right with it.
It's important. How does any sheet to say that it's, that you measure by the time of Kishu? Even an Arul Gomer won't be covered.
Oh, I don't believe that that's the case. I don't think so. Ruch Hashem, none of us know, but I don't think so. I think you're mistaken about that.
That's right.
That's right. Okay, again, AP course. All right. Simi Reish Samuel Dawud. Simi Reish Samuel Dawud Sif Dawud. Let's move back a little bit. The Shulchan Aruch says, Kohamal velo par kilo omal. If you do Mila without Priya, so the Mila is no good. The Pischei Tshuva there is Sifka in Yud Gimel. Again, my impression is that Priya is underneath the Or HaArla. Underneath the Or HaArla, there's a membrane, which they call the Or HaPriya. Now, so it used to be in the olden days, they would cut off the Or HaArla and then pull back this membrane, which is called the Or HaPriya. Nowadays, we do Mila and Priya at the same time. That's what Rabbi Tendler pointed out. The Sefer HaBris claims that already he found sources in Ga'enim already, that they said that they did Mila and Priya together at the same time. And all of the Paiskim, when they first started doing it, all of the Paiskim got, there were the Kokairis and everything against it. But the Sefer HaBris documents the whole thing. It's a beautiful Sefer. It documents the whole thing that nowadays most Paiskim accept. And they found earlier sources for it also. You could do Mila and Priya at the same time. The Pischei Tshuva and Sifka in Yud Gimel, quotes from the Chamuri Daniel, that even though the Or HaPriya, they used to just pull back, you can't just pull back the Or HaArla. That's no good. The Or HaArla has to be removed. Other Paiskim, though, claim that you don't actually have to remove the Or HaArla. It's a question, what is the nature of the mitzvah of Mila? And it's relevant for a few medical issues that come up.
Arla
is the nature of Mila... Huh?
Arla.
They used to pull back the Or HaPriya. That everyone agrees is okay. You can. They used to remove the Arla.
You don't cut it.
No, they would cut the Arla, remove the Arla,
right,
and then pull back the Or HaPriya.
Oh, okay.
But the question is, what about the Or HaArla? Can you do that, too? Can you cut it and pull it back? Is that good enough? Just to reveal the Atara, you have to remove the Or HaArla. No, Rabbi Tendler talked about his case of the medical procedure where they needed to, they don't remove the Arla, they use it to make up, what do they call it? What is it called? I forgot the name of that situation. It's a big machlekes ha'paiskim. What is the nature of the mitzvah milah? Is it to remove the arha arla, or is it to uncover the atara? We know it's uncovering the atara, but they actually have to remove the arha arla or not. So that the Pesach Teshuvah here quotes from the Chamuri Daniel that you actually have to remove the arha arla, and others claim as long as you reveal the atara. I think the Chachmas Adam has this discussion. So he claims also he has this discussion whether or not you have to reveal the atara or remove the arha arla. The Shulchan Aruch says if you do mila without priya, tkila lo mal, then you've done nothing. Both of them are essential parts of the mitzvah mila. But there's a machlekes achreinim. What does it mean kila lo mal? Does that mean you've done nothing or you've done half? You're not done. Does it mean mal par kila lo mal? You're not done or you've done nothing? Because the Shulchan Aruch says in Simereish Samach Vav Sifya Dalet that if in the olden days when they had mila and priya as two separate stages, so they would give one person to do mila and then be mechabit someone else to do the priya. So he says, you shouldn't do that on Shabbos. During the week, you could do it. The Ramah says you could even do it on Shabbos. So the B.R. Gra there explains that the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch are arguing about whether Mila on Shabbos is Hutra or Dechuya. If Mila on Shabbos is Hutra, so then you could even split up the Mila and the Priya. If Mila on Shabbos is Dechuya, then you can't split up the Mila and Priya because you're making one person's doing part of it, the other person's doing the other part. It could be only one person who's being Derecha Shabbos. You shouldn't split it up to two people. But if it's Hutra, then it's allowed. So the Pisrei Tshuva there in Sivka and Tez Zayin, Reish Samuvel, Sivka and Tez Zayin, quotes from the Yamshel Shlomo, that you should never split up the Mila and the Priya on Shabbos, not because Mila on Shabbos is Dechuya, but because Kahamavolo Parakilo Mal. If you do Mila without Priya, you've done nothing. So you'd be Mechavet somebody with Chilul Shabbos. It's not a kibud. So the Ramah clearly holds Mav lo par kilo mal means you've done half. You're not done yet. You can be mechabit someone else with the other half if Mila and Shabbos is Dechuya. It's Hutra. But the Yamshel Shlomo held that Mila and Shabbos you should never split up, not because it's Dechuya, but because Mav lo par kilo lo mal means you did nothing. The Shulchan Aruch over here, Reish Samach Dalet, continues on with this discussion, the procedure of Mila, and the Shulchan Aruch discusses, of course, that there's a mitzvah to do, or the procedure involved doing mitzitza as well, sucking some blood out of the wound from the Makom HaMila. Rabbi Tendler discussed mitzitza at length, but we'll just explain Bekitzer, the bottom line from the discussion, and that is that the Gemara says clearly that the reason why we do mitzitza is in order, for medical reasons, in order to prevent infection. So Rabbi Tendler's main taina was, if mitzitza is only to prevent infection, then perhaps it's not required now. It's not required nowadays at all, because nowadays we have better forms of antiseptic. Just like the Shulchan Aruch says in Archaim, that they used to heat up water. We discussed this in Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh. They used to heat up water to wash the baby in before the mila and after the mila. And the Shulchan Aruch says nowadays we don't wash the baby in hot water before the mila, we don't wash the baby in hot water after the mila, because we have better antiseptics. So too, perhaps now that we have better antiseptics, there's no obligation to do mitzitza either. That's why Rabbi Tendler suggested perhaps not doing it on Shabbos at all, or certainly not doing mitzitza bepeh would be, it can't be a ceremonial way of doing it if it's only to prevent infection. The Avnei Nezer, though, the classical approach to mitzitza is formulated by the Avnei Nezer, which Rabbi Tendler quoted, but the Avnei Nezer says, true, initially, the mitzvah of mitzitza was about preventing infection, but now that it became part of the procedure of the way mila is done, it blended in to become part of the mitzvah of mila. Under what rubric? How did it become part of the mitzvah of mila? So the standard explanation is, based on that old thing we just explained from Reb Chaim, that Hatovas Dam Bris is part of the mitzvah of mila. So since Hatovas Dam Bris is part of the mitzvah of mila, the way that it's expressed, the way that's been formalized as part of the procedure of mila is through mitzitza. There has to be an official drawing of blood in order to fulfill the properly the mitzvah of Hatovas Dam Bris. Even though drawing blood is part of the mitzvah of Hatovas Dam Bris, and perhaps mitzitza is the formalized way of going about it, the Sefer HaBris already quotes that throughout different generations, when people were afraid that you would contract different diseases or infections by doing mitzitza bepeh, many had suggested already to do mitzitza with a kli, which either, I think they mean with a sponge, without sucking with the mouth, or certainly mitzitza with a tube. Say quote from the Chasim Sofer, and the Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, Rabbi Chaim Eiser, Rabbi Shechter discusses this in the Nefesh HaRav also, from the Rav and from Rabbi Chaim, that they all were in favor of doing mitzitza with a tube. The RCA put out a statement a whole bunch of years ago from all the Rebbeim at YU, they're signing on that they should do mitzitza with a tube. But again, it's the whole issue has come up again. You can read about it. This is why it came up. But the whole issue has come up again because Rabbi Tendler claimed that there's a high risk of infection. The reason why we don't find lots of bacterial infections is because they use bacitracin. But there's a whole discussion if you can contract herpes and everything. We'll leave that for Rabbi Tendler. Simen Reish Samech Hei. So the beginning of Simen Reish Samech Hei, the Shulchan Aruch discusses, again, we're now leaving the procedure of the mitzvah of Mila, and we're getting more to the Orach Chaim section of Mila, which is Reish Samech Hei, Reish Samech Vav. So the Shulchan Aruch, at the beginning of Reish Samech Hei, discusses the bracha of Lachniso Bevriso Shavram Avinu. We know Allah Mila is a mitzvah, is a birchas ha-mitzvah. It's made over lasiyasim before the Mila is done. What about the bracha of Lachniso Bevriso Shavram Avinu? So the Noisei Kerem quote that there's a, I mean, the Shach over there quotes that the Machlekes HaRishayim is the Baruch of Achniz B'Rishal Shavram Avinu, a Birchas Shevach Vaida, in which case it should be after the Milo, or perhaps it's a Birchas HaMitzvah, in which case it should be Yoyva La'asiyasim before the Milo, or maybe it's a Birchas HaMitzvah which is totally Bacherim, because the Moel has to do the Milo, and I'm making it, the father, Avia Ben is making Lachniz B'Rishal Shavram Avinu, so it's a Birchas HaMitzvah which is totally Bacherim, so that should be after the Milo. So a whole suffix, when should the bracha of Lachnisa Bevisa Shavram Avinu be? Before the Mila or after the Mila? So the Shulchan Aruch comes up with this compromise, which is a question, who does it make happy? But the Shulchan Aruch says you should do it between the Mila and the Priya, to satisfy both. The question is, what do you do nowadays? That you have, we do Mila and Priya Babasachas, when do you make the bracha of Lachnisa Bevisa Shavram Avinu? So some claim nowadays we really paskin, it's a Bircha Shevach Vaida. Rav Shechter held like that. That there's a, we do make it after the Mila. So there's no rush. You can make Lachnisa B'Vishal Shavram Avinu after the Mila. However, the poskim quotes from Rav Moshe, that Rav Moshe held, we should still try and fulfill the meaning of the rush, even though there's no break anymore between Mila and Priya, but we should do it at the time that the Moel is doing the Mila. So that's why lots of fathers rush. Right after the Moel makes the bracha, ala Mila, the father rushes, and he says the bracha of Lachnisa B'Vishal Shavram Avinu, at least to try and chap around to do it along the lines of the rush, at the time that the Mila and the Priya are happening. So after the make the Lachnisa Shabavisa Shavram Avinu and the Mayal made his Alamila, so then there's three more brachas. Three more things. You have the Bari Priya Gafen, then you have the bracha Shekhada Shidin Mi Beten, and then you have the Kriya Shem. Why do we do the Kriya Shem now? You can do the Kriya Shem, why wait till now? Why don't we do it when the baby's born? So the Matei Moshe claims that the minig is to do the Kriya Shem right after the Mila because Avram Avinu's name changed after the Mila from Avram to Avraham, so too we change the name of the baby right after the Mila. Nowadays, a very common shiloh, you have premature babies where the Mila is going to be pushed off, let's say, for a few months. So the child's supposed to be nameless for a few months because of the minig of the Matei Moshe. So some of the medical halachas svarim discuss this, Dr. Abraham and others. In the journals, they all discuss this. Perhaps some poskim can recommend it to name the baby earlier, particularly if the child's going to be in the hospital for a while. Why? Because they claim for psychological reasons for the parents to attach to the baby. Or the nurses will take better care of the baby if the child has a name. If they think, oh, the parents haven't gotten around to naming the baby anything yet, how much do they really care about the baby? That's why some people will name the baby other things. You know, you name the baby, Arnie. And we don't have no intention of calling the baby Arnie or something, but we just name it for the nurses. And it's, I don't know if Baich will get upset about it, but Cedar Kedushin, but anyway, they name the baby, you know, Joel or whatever. It doesn't mean anything. But they claim, though, that there's perhaps a good idea to name the baby. Others claim that if you need to daven for the child, then he's sick, so perhaps it's better if your child has a name. So that's why you look around in the Sfar, many poskim held that it's perhaps a good idea to name the child if he's going to be in the hospital for a significant period of time. A week, 2 weeks, nobody names the baby earlier. But if you have it for an extended period of time, it's a discussion. It's an issue you should be aware of and you should look into and formulate a position. So you have Bari Priya Gafen, then you have a Shekhada Shidin Mi Beten, then you have the Kriya Shem. When do you drink from the Bari Priya Gafen? So the Torah quotes three minhagim about this. One minig was to drink after the Kriya Shem. A guy makes Bari Priya Gafen. Usually whoever the Mechaber with the Bari Priya Gafen, the Mechaber with the Shekhada Shidin Mi Beten, then the Mechaber someone else with the Kriya Shem. So when do you drink? So one minig was you drink after the Kriya Shem. The Kriya Shem is not a hefsik, even though someone else is making it. And others held the other minig that the Torah quotes was to do it, was to put a little wine in the tinok's mouth after Shekadish Yidin Mi Beten, because we can't drink, because they're not done yet, so give it to the tinok, kind of like on a tinus. And then the third minig that the Torah quotes is to, that the person himself should drink. whoever makes the bar pirig often, asher kadesh din mibetan, he should drink a little bit, then let the other person make the kriya shem. So I used to think that the minig was that you drank after the whole thing. Whoever made the bar pirig often, he makes asher kadesh, gives the kais over to the person who's making the kriya shem, and then he takes it back afterwards and drinks. And I think that used to be the old time minig. But Rabbi Kiva Eger has in his Truvis, and the Rabbi Moshe has like this in the Egros Moshe, and everywhere this is the in style thing to do now. So everyone makes a bari priya gofen, and then they make the Asher Kadesh Yedin Mibetan, and then they drink a little bit, like that minig that the Torah quotes. Then they refill the kais so that it shouldn't be a kais pogum, and you give it back to the guy to make the Kriya Shem. How much you have to drink? So the Taz writes in Or Chaim that you have to drink a maloi. You don't have to drink maloi lugmav like kiddush or avdol, because this kais is not in the Gemara. It's just to give chashivas to the mila. So as long as you taste a little bit, that's good enough. Somehow they have to drink a maloi lugmav. So. Rav Shachter pointed out even if you have to drink a maloi lugmav, you shouldn't sit there gulping down the kais in between the Asher Kadesh Yedin Mibetan and the Kriya Shem. It look funny. So he said take a little sip and then you could drink a maloi lugmav afterwards. After you can take it back after the Kriya Shem and drink a maloi lugmav. But many held you don't need a maloi lugmav at all, because it's only to give chashivas to the milah, so you don't need maloi.
So what exactly do Rosh
Hashanah
do?
You make bari pri hagafen, asher kadesh yedin mibetan, drink a little bit, they'll refill the kais. Most moilim won't give you the option as a rabbi. They think you don't know anything. So they'll give you to drink, they'll say drink, and they'll tell you to drink. So it's not worth it explaining. So you drink. That's the minig. Most hold like that. Rosh Hashanah also thinks you should drink right after asher kadesh yedin mibetan, so you drink. They refill the kais, and then you make the kriya shem. There are more rites in Simei Reish Samech Hesef Yud Beis that you're supposed to make a suda by the bris milah, but you don't invite people to the suda, because the Ramah says, "Call Misha, whoever doesn't need it, a suda is bris milah. Reish Samech Hesef Beis is menudo l'shamayim. It's not a good thing. So if you don't need a suda bris milah, you're menudo l'shamayim. So therefore, the Pesachei Tshuvah, if Kohen Yudches says you don't invite people to a bris, if you invite him to the bris and he doesn't come, he's menudo l'shamayim. So that's why the minig is you just tell people, we're making a bris. You want to come, come. Not, you don't invite people. The Shulchan Aruch in Simei Reish Samech Vav Sif Ches discusses a child that's born Bein Hashmoshes. So a child that's born Bein Hashmoshes is a Suffolk Milo Bezmanes, so it's not Deich HaShabbos. The Shach in Sifkot Yin Yudalof discusses, well, what's Bein Hashmoshes? What about the Goinim, Rabbeinu Tam, so whatever Yeshita is, he has this whole discussion, but the way I've heard from different Paiskim is that whatever Yeshita is in general, if these are people who are Chayshish for Rabbeinu Tam, so there should be Chayshish for Rabbeinu Tam here also, and that's Bein Hashmoshes is longer. If you're, everyone's Chayshish for the Gaonim nowadays. No one's not Chayshish for the Gaonim. So you're Chayshish for the Gaonim. If you're Chayshish for Rabbeinu Tam too, by Shabbos, let's say you're Machmir for Rabbeinu Tam, so you're Machmir for Rabbeinu Tam here too. If by Shabbos you're not Machmir for Rabbeinu Tam, you don't wait 72 minutes to do malacha, so then over here too, you don't have to wait 72 minutes for Bein Hashmoshes. Bein Hashmoshes would be like whatever it is normally for you. It doesn't have to change by Mila. The Psukim at the beginning of Parshas Tazria put the mitzvah of doing Mila right next to the Parsha that a woman is Tmei Oleda. So the Gemara learns out from that connection that the woman is Tmei Oleda, and the fact that you have to do Mila on the eighth day, that the only time you do Mila on the eighth day is if the woman is Tmei Oleda. If the woman is not Tmei Oleda, so then you don't do Mila on the eighth day. So that's why the Gemara says, if you have a child that's a Yotzei Dofen, a cesarean section, where the mother is not Tmei Oleda, so there's no Mila on the eighth day. But the Gemara, I apologize. The Gemara has a suffix about a Yotzei Dofen. The Gemara has a suffix about this. Is a Yotzei Dofen, does he get Mila on the eighth day, or does he not need Mila? Does his Mila, what is it? Is a mother? The Gemara is a suffix about this. Now the Gemara is a suffix about that. From the fact that the psukim are next to each other, does that mean that in order for to do mila on the eighth day and be doicha Shabbos, the woman has to be tmei oleda, or not? That in order to be doicha Shabbos, she does not have to be tmei oleda. That's a machlokes in the Gemara. Now we're machmer that if a woman is pregnancy was a yotzei dofen. Could be that in order to do the Mila on Shabbos, she has to be Tmei Oleda, so therefore it's a suffix. We're Machmir not to do the Mila on Shabbos, because she has to be Tmei Oleda. This comes up not only with regards to cesarean section, but with regards to new fertility treatment. So Shlomo Zalman has in the Mincha Shlomo, he quotes from, of all places, he quotes from Rabbeinu Chananu, Meseches Chagiga, about a woman who gets pregnant in a bathtub, that if she's Nisabra Bambati, so Rabbeinu Chananu writes, she's not Tmei Oleda because it's Maisa Nisim. So therefore, Shlomo Zalman claims if a woman is nisabra through a newer fertility treatment and some sort of insemination, not through a traditional ma'isabia, so then perhaps the woman is not tmei oleida, and you couldn't do the bris on Shabbos. So if not, everybody knows. Nowadays, some people are very open about that she's inseminated, so you don't have to hide anything. But if you're not so open about it, so then you just tell everybody the baby's yellow, and you're okay. You don't have to, and everybody pushes off a bris because the baby's yellow. But according to Shlomo Zalman, you can't do a meal on Shabbos if it was through insemination. Last thing is the Shulchan Aruch over here, Reish Samu Vav Siv Ches, says that if you have a child that's born Bein Hashmashos, of course it's not Doicha Shabbos. Then he quotes from the Rosh that it's also not Doicha Yom Tov Sheni, not Doicha Yom Tov Rishon, it's not Doicha Yom Tov Sheni. The Shachans of Kohen Ches quotes from the Rambam that a Milo Shelo Bizmana, a Milo Bein Hashmashos, which is the Suffolk Milo Bizmana, Suffolk Milo Shelo Bizmana, is not Doicha Shabbos, not Doicha Yom Tov, but it is Doicha Yom Tov Sheni. Except Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah, Kedatz Yom Arichta. So Rambam holds it's Doicha Yom Tov Sheni, the Rosh holds it's not. The Pischei Tshuva there in Sif Ches, Reish Samach Vav Sif Ches, in Zion, quotes from the Night of Yehuda, that even the Rush only said this by a Vadai Milo Shelo Bizmana. Even though it sounds like they're talking about a Suffolk Milo Bizmana, he claims the Rush only said this by a Vadai Milo Shelo Bizmana. But if you would have a Suffolk Milo Bizmana, it's born Bein Hashmashes, or a Yotzei Doifen, where the Gemara is not sure if a woman has to be Tmei Leida in order to do the Mila on Shabbos. We're not sure. We're machmir not to do a cesarean section, a baby is born cesarean section, not to do the Mila on Shabbos, but it's a Suffolk. So whenever you have a Suffolk Mila Bizman, a Suffolk Mila Shalom Bizman, either the child is born Ben Hashmashes, or it's Yaitse Daifen, so the Neid Behuda claimed there the Rosh would do the Mila on the Yom Tov Sheni. So the Rebbe Kiva Eger explains like a Sveik Sveika. So Yom Tov Sheni is a Suffolk, and it's a Suffolk Milo Bizmana. And I think he even claims, even on Rosh Hashanah, even a Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah. But there's a Tshuva in Rabbi Aaron Cutler's Tshuvas in the Mishnah Torah B'Yaron where he disagrees with this Night of Yehuda. And he claims not on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is not a Suffolk. It's Yom Arichta. So if you have this situation, some Rabbanim told me it comes up every year. I've never had this situation. But a Yotze Daifen on a Yom Tov Sheni, where the Milo Bizmana is Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah. So that's this shaira between the Neir Yehuda and the Mishnah's Rebbe Yaron. The Neir Yehuda claims whenever it's Yom Tov Sheni, you could do a Suffolk Milo Bizmana. But if it's Rosh Hashanah, so then Rebbe Aaron Cutler disagrees. That's this month. Okay, Shkayach Rabbeinu. Emir Hashem, we'll have the Chazor Shef Hilchos Geiros probably next Monday. I'll send out an email about it. Not this Thursday, right? It's the last shiur. Next Thursday. Same day as the shiur final to make things convenient.